Would you agree that either these polls are right and we are completely wrong about America and the republic is over because people just think differently now, or there's something really wrong with these polls?
There's really no other conclusion you can draw because, Glenn, if you looked at every other metric by which you judge an elections environment other than the public polls, I mean, even look at something that would be a kind of a secondary data point. The NBA is hemorrhaging viewers in the middle of its finals with one of its marquee franchises, its marquee team. And it's because even in its own, pardon the pun, bubble, it's just exhausting to be politically preached at with the wokeness message, even from what's probably the most liberal sports fan base in the country. You look at voter registrations, you look at early voting. I mean, by every other metric you would judge an election, the unemployment rate going down, the final report before the election. Every other metric you would judge an election, you would think that Trump is coasting to victory, except for the public polls. And so that's why I have been doing for weeks now a deep dive on their methodologies.
Okay, so tell me, because the one that everybody was freaking out about was Rasmussen, because when Rasmussen, their polls have always favored Donald Trump, to the point to where you look at it and you're like, I'm not sure, I want to see another poll, right?
Right, right, yeah.
This poll has him losing by what? 12.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I have to give them great credit. This is a great marketing scheme. It got me to subscribe to their platinum package. That's the only way I could look at their methodology. And I got to the very first point. And just to put that 12 points in perspective, that would be the worst a Democrat challenger has beaten a Republican incumbent president since FDR Hoover, 1932, almost 100 years. That would have Joe Biden outperforming FDR's final reelect in the fall of 1944 while he was winning World War II.
Right? Oh my gosh.
So I looked at their first data point and then I just stopped and wished I had not subscribed. They are projecting that Donald Trump is only going to win 76% of Republican votes. To put that in perspective, in the last seven presidential elections, and I don't go back any further than that, because then you get into an era when Republicans could win California and Florida wasn't a toss-up. Mm-hmm. All right, so it's just not pertinent. If you go back to the last seven presidential elections, the lowest percentage any GOP nominee has gotten of the Republican vote was George Herbert Walker Bush, only got 73% in 1992. But he had Ross Perot on the ticket, siphoning away votes from him. There is no such third party candidate this time. Trump got 88% of the Republican vote 4 years ago, Glenn. And that's when guys like you and I with platforms were sitting out not supporting him. All right. I mean, the idea that if he only gets 76% of the Republican vote with the Democrats, the most left wing they've ever been, if that happens on Election Day, I'm coming back here on Tuesday, the 4th. You name your stupid human trick. I'll do my best to perform it. That's not happening.
You have to eat Pat's underwear. You have to eat Pat's underwear.
Preferably pre-worn.
Okay. Yes. All right. That's a deal.
It's a deal.
All right. It's a deal.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Please. That's for the first moment I'm torn. I vote for Donald Trump or not. I mean, that's staggering. So how do they justify that?
I have no idea. And maybe that's why you've got to subscribe to some of their internals, is they don't want you to see how they came up with their math. If someone came to me, and as I've mentioned before on your show, and you have mentioned it, I've covered and worked on these campaigns. I worked on a presidential campaign last time. One of the things I did was analyze polling data and how we should strategize in response to it. If someone brought me a poll that showed that this president, he has almost a level of loyalty among Republicans that drives guys like you and I crazy, Glenn, okay? And if they came to me and said he's only going to get 76% of registered Republicans, my response would be either you're fired or pay or refund me the cost of that poll. That's a ridiculous assumption. And that's a 12-point decline in where he was 4 years ago. And if you look at their top margin of, you know, their top line of results, it's a 12-point spread. It's pretty much all that data point right there.
Tell me about some of the other big polls. Because all the polls are saying this. NBC had him, what, 20 points behind?
Yeah, that's just not going to happen. Okay. But if you look at some, you know, let me look at Monmouth, because when I was on the Cruz campaign, we took them seriously. We thought that they were a quality public pollster. They're rated A+ by 538. So they just put out a Pennsylvania poll that has Biden winning the state by 11. Now that would overperform what Obama did in that state in 2008. And Obama 2008 is the biggest Democratic presidential victory since LBJ 64. And they're saying that Biden's going to overperform that in a state that Trump just won. But if you look at the voter registration numbers, since 2016, Democrats have lost almost 42,000 voters in the state. Republicans have gained 160,000 voters in the state. Mm. To put that in perspective, Glenn, in the last election, Trump won the decisive three states by 78,000 combined total votes, which means Republicans have gained 150% more than that in Pennsylvania alone, and yet Trump's going to perform worse? That just doesn't make sense to me. I think NBC News is a scam.
Okay, so let me ask you this. This is because this would play into, but this is conspiracy stuff. This would play into the fact that they all will say, I guarantee you, if it's a landslide at night, they will all say the polls didn't show this. Something is radically wrong. There's been fraud somewhere.
There's no question. And then if they want to steal an election with mail-in voter fraud results, they can say, well, this just matches up with the polls. They can go the other way. Now, I don't believe Monmouth is in on that. I certainly think NBC News is. I mean, look at their news coverage. I think Monmouth is probably just doing a poll based on a 2016 voter file that doesn't reflect a net gain of 110,000 Republican voter registrations in the state. That's probably what's going on there. But for every Monmouth that might just not have the latest information to start a sample from, I mean, would it be a huge leap of logic for the people that gave us Russian collusion, Brett Kavanaugh, marauding rapists to just fake the polls?
It's a scary time. It's a really, truly scary time. I just want to show you one universal principle that I think is being violated now, and we're not being punished by Antifa. We have violated certain things that are absolutely true, and it has produced members of Antifa or Antifa. I want you to listen to the Antifa ambassador. He's standing in front of the Portland City Council. He's wearing a mask. This is from 2017, and I want you to listen to how sincere he is. Listen.
And you may all interrupt my testimony as much as you like, because your righteous indignation fills me with a fire, comrades. I will tell you what, Wheeler. What do you think this is? It's a gas mask. My own capital, my own labor. I had to put into this to protect myself from your violent and oppressive paramilitary organization that only thirsts for blood. You are a capitalist, a treasurer, a statist, a tyrant. You are nothing to me. You are just scum. This is nothing about sanctuary. This is a chew out. To let you know, this is Little Beirut, Mayor Wheeler. This is the city of roses, and it has thorns. They're standing behind me. There's people getting real done with your cops in the street. You are laying the seeds for an insurrection on the record, Jeff Singer. It is not a threat. It is a fact, and it's a fact. You are building towards something that's going to blow. Go f*** yourself, you f***ing pig.
Okay. Now, let's just look at this dispassionately here for a second. How can this kid, who at the time looks to be in his 20s for as much as I can tell, and he's a white kid, what do we know about the members generally of Antifa, some of the more active ones? They are white middle class. White middle class in America is the most fortunate group of people ever to be born on the face of the earth at any time. If you were born in America and you were born even poor in America, you are still the most blessed person on the face of the earth of all time. It has never been better, ever. Now, you can say that you're more blessed if you're rich, but I don't think that's true. Problems don't go away when you're rich. You're more comfortable, but your problems can become even worse and almost more psychotic. These are middle-class kids, and kids that have been middle-class and upper-class. These are not lower-class. This is middle and upper. So the upper-class kids, they've had everything. Middle-class kids have had almost everything. But they don't have meaning in their life. There's nothing to work for. There is nothing to work at. There are only things to buy or be, like famous. I want to be famous. There is no meaning in our children's lives. There is no struggle in our children's lives. And everything that is being taken from us, from TARP, is the ability to fail and struggle. Because everybody is too big to fail, except for you. So the unfairness begins there. But because we don't have struggle, our kids have lost meaning. You know, they say when you're given something, it's meaningless, right? Well, our kids have been given an education. They have been given a comfortable life. They have been given the things that they have in their life. In my generation, I don't mean to sound like an old man, but boy, I'm on that road. I wasn't given those things. Although my grandparents and my parents, they looked at me as spoiled because of what they didn't have. We are so many generations away from real hard work. We barely hold our kids to standards anymore. In fact, we don't tell them standards anymore. We don't expect it. We expect that they're going to have sex anyway. You know, they're going to get into trouble. We expect that from them, and so what do we get? I wasn't expecting. My kids were having a hard time struggling with homework yesterday, and I don't know how to parent my own kids when it comes to homework. Because it's not doing it isn't an option. What do I say? I know I did it because I was afraid mom and dad would kick my butt. So if I'm not going to kick my butts, the butts of my children, how do I motivate them when they're like, I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. You gotta do it. How's that one? You gotta do it. They see no value in things. All of our kids. And they are depressed. So what does Antifa give you? This guy actually believes that there is blood in the streets, that this is violent, that it is that Portland is Beirut. He actually believes that. Why? Because it gives his life meaning. That's how screwed up we are. And it's all because we're not being punished. We're violating certain principles. The truth and true principles must be restored. And they will be whether we like it or not. Let me go to Grace. Hello, Grace. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Where do you go to school? I shouldn't even ask that. You're in Texas, and you have a professor. And tell me about the professor without singling him out or her.
Sure. So my professor, we're learning about different communication theories. And what we have been talking about for the last few weeks is critical theory, especially in the economic sense. Mm-hmm. Basically saying that there is a huge gap between the bottom 10% and the top 1%. Mm-hmm. And the people in the bottom 10% are stuck there, and the people at the top are resilient and stay at the top and basically have a hand over everyone. And the people at the bottom, especially the communities of color, do not really, they have a chance, but it's a very limited chance of getting even in the top 10%.
Right.
So,
okay. All right. So you have to argue this. It's a flawed thing to, if you're going to argue that this system as it currently stands is a free market, because it's not a free market. It is big businesses and those with real money colluding with Congress and everybody else, not through just elections, but through lobbying. That really, I mean, that's why you see Google and Twitter getting all of the special exemptions, because they've got enough money to be able to do it. So don't argue that this system that we're using right now, this system needs to be cleaned up and people need to go to jail and laws need to be enacted to stop this kind of stuff. Grace, let me introduce you to Justin Haskins. Have you two met? Have you already talked on the phone?
We actually talked yesterday on the phone, okay. Yes.
All right. So, Justin, welcome, Justin. Justin is, I think, one of the best voices on socialism, Marxism, what's going on in America, and also critical theory. And I get a little fuzzy and probably too much in the weeds on critical theory. So I wanted to get Justin, who I think is really good. Hi, Justin.
Hey, how you doing, Glenn? Good to speak with you.
Good to talk to you. So, Justin, you understand what Grace is trying to find out, right?
I do, yes. Okay. Grace and I spoke yesterday, and she's got an assignment coming up. And if we don't get an A on this assignment, I'm going to have a Black Lives Matter-like protest on the front lawn of the college. I think that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
That's going to be the plan.
So, Justin,
I do understand it.
Take her through, and the audience, because there's a lot of people. You know, I just talked to Gad Saad yesterday, and by the way, if you're a Blaze TV subscriber, that is out right now. You can watch it on demand. Tomorrow it'll be released on YouTube for everybody else about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But Grace, I urge you to watch that, because he's also, he's a professor, and he explains what's going on really, really well. I think that will help you as well. If you have somebody in your life that is trying to figure things out, watch that podcast with him, because he's really good. All right, so Justin, where do we start?
Okay, so I think the most important thing to understand is what critical theorists are trying to do. And what critical theorists are trying to do is they're looking at the world, the way of looking at the world. That's what critical theory is. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to explain why the problems that exist in the world exist the way that they do. Mm-hmm. And essentially what critical theorists argue, and there's a whole bunch of different kinds of critical theories, but what they always try to argue is that the reason why some groups of people in society, whether it's race or religion or any other kind of group, class, the reason why those people are not successful relative to other people, not as successful as other people, is because of power structures, differences between power in society. So, for example, critical race theory is one of the easiest ones to understand. White people wrote the laws of the United States. This is how a critical race theorist would talk. White people wrote the laws of the United States. So the system is rigged in the favor of white people. Even if they didn't do it deliberately, they subconsciously did it. They created a system that benefits their own group. And so African Americans and Hispanics and other groups, they have no hope of success because the rules are written to favor the people who are in power. And that's what makes it so hard for people to move out of lower classes into upper classes. This is what they would argue. And so all the problems that exist in society exist directly or indirectly because of a difference in power dynamics between groups. So the only way to fix that is for there to be no differences in powers between groups. Now, this is why it's so important for people. It's really important for people to understand this. This is a fundamentally Marxist concept. And the reason I say that is not only because Karl Marx made these exact same kinds of arguments about wealth when he's arguing against capitalism,
right,
but because when you take this to its logical end, if you have different amounts of wealth in society, even if you could fix all the other differences in power, if you have different amounts of wealth in society, then you have different amounts of power in society. So the only way to fix the problem, if you take it to its logical end, is for everyone to have exactly the same amount of wealth. That's communism. That's why this system ultimately always leads back to Marxism, because that's the only way for there to have no differences in power that in society.
The other way to go is like a national socialism or some sort of authoritarianism. It doesn't have to be communism, but it's always Marxism. You know, the Nazis were socialists, national socialists. And what they said was you can have private property, but you can only use it the way the state wants you to use it. What the Great Reset, now being pushed by the UN and also the Economic Forum, World Economic Forum, that Great Reset is based on this same thing, that we're going to balance everything out, and companies will be able to own things, and they'll be the manufacturing company. Apple will still exist, but they'll be partners with the government. They'll have to make the things that the government and their advisors say they need to make. And it's more of a Chinese communism where it's a hybrid between the two, they say, but there is no free market in that. Would you agree, Justin?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is the way that you get socialism in the 21st century. You're not going to get it through marching people out of the cities into communes in the countryside like they did 50, 60 years ago. It's just not going to happen. You're going to do it exactly the way you just described, by controlling the economy, not necessarily owning everything. And the elites, of course, are the only people in the world who are qualified enough to tell everyone in the world how to live. It has to be the elites that control all of us. So you're exactly right, and that's what the Great Reset is all about, and that's what the World Economic Forum is pushing for.
So, Grace, before we move on, any questions on what Justin just said?
So far, it is making sense. He's very clear. So.
Okay. So where do we go now?
Right. So I think we need to start explaining how you can dismiss this argument. It's a very, very popular argument. Essentially, as Grace pointed out, one of the go-to arguments that they make on the left is there's this wealth gap, and this wealth gap is proof of the fact that there's this oppression that's going on, that the system is rigged, that it's completely unfair. Correct. And they focus on that wealth gap all the time.
Okay.
Right. So the most important, there's two ways to debunk socialism in general. I think all kinds of socialist systems. The first is an economic argument. All right. And what you want to do is you want to look at the history of the world. Just look at the history of the world. Find any successful socialist society that has ever existed.
It never
happened.
Yeah, they existed in America. Really good, smart socialists have tried it in America. In fact, look here in Dallas. That's what Reunion Square is about. That was a town of socialists. In fact, one of the leaders of France, of the Socialist Party, came over here to do it, and it failed spectacularly. So even the best minds have tried it, and with the best intent, and it fails always.
Right, exactly. And not just in America, not just in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, literally every continent on the planet where there's human beings, they've tried some kind of socialist system and it has failed spectacularly. And in most cases, those countries don't exist anymore. Those governments have been completely abandoned. So the history of it, just right off the bat, should be a gigantic red flag. If you can't find one successful example of your idea that's been around for 150 years, then maybe your idea is not a very good one. You know, I think that's a good way to start.
Hold on just a second. And I want you to know, the Pilgrims tried a form of it. The Mormons tried a form of it after they had crossed the mountain. They were so broke and just broken. They tried, I think it was called the United Order or something. They tried something where it basically socialism before Marx. So even the best intended people, even the people who are loyal to God, this is not about Marx. This is about human nature. It doesn't work. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and in arguing with socialists, the quotes from the Pilgrims, from the Puritans, talking about how this system doesn't work are absolutely unbelievable. If people don't have, if they have arguing with socialists, look that up. If you don't have it, buy it and check those quotes out because they're unbelievable. But the second thing that we that I think needs to be addressed is this wealth inequality argument. The fact of the matter is, and this is going to sound a little controversial to some people, but I don't give a crap about wealth inequality. It doesn't matter. And the reason it doesn't matter is because if you look at history, the societies that have had the best wealth equality are the ones that are hellholes. Those are the places where everybody's miserable. That's what you get in North Korea. It, you know, everyone is essentially equal, except for the ruling people, of course, but everyone else is essentially equal. That's what we see in Cambodia with the killing fields and the Khmer Rouge. That was what they were going for there. When you have absolute wealth equality, you end up with lots of poverty.
And that's why the great example of this is that's why the Venezuelan people hired a bus driver. A guy who had never been rich, it was not powerful. He's going to be the ruler of the people. But once these people get in charge, people with power go corrupt almost always. And when they have no stops, that's why that bus driver is now one of the richer people in the world.
That's exactly right. Now, conversely, the societies that have wealth inequality and have free markets and or relatively free markets and some and protections for individual liberty, because you have to have both of those things. You can't just have free markets without protections for individual liberty. But when you have both, what we see is even though you have big wealth gaps, the quality of life for everyone has dramatically improved in these societies over the past 200 to 300 years. And there are essentially no exceptions to this. This is the norm. This is the rule. If you have a free market society and you have protections for individual liberty, the quality of life for even the poorest people in society will be dramatically improved.